I think George Strait would have been proud of you. You did good. Thank you. What a great message in that song. I had a professor in college who always tried to help us to see that there is no such thing as a distinction between the sacred and the secular, that all truth is God's truth and all beauty is God's beauty. And so it's kind of fun to do a country and western song in worship this morning. So I was still kind of having fun with the kids. You know, it's such a shame that we grow up, isn't it? It's just not right that we grow up. We should all still stay as kids, because kids have that energy, enthusiasm, that creativity, all those wonderful things. And, you know, as we get older, we give up on a lot of those things, and that's just not right. So that was fun this morning. I'm not sure Donna thought it was fun, but I thought it was fun from where I was sitting. So kids are just wonderful. Speaking of kids, we're going to spend the next three Sundays dealing with the parable of the lost son, or you've heard it sometimes referred to as the parable of the prodigal son. It really is not the parable of the prodigal son, and it's really not the parable of the lost son. It's so much more than that. It's really probably one of the great parables that Jesus ever spoke. There's so much in this story that it's going to take us 3 weeks to look at all of it. And today we're just going to look at the first part of it, the younger son, who's really kind of the more familiar part of the story. So we'll just start with the obvious, and we'll work our way into this parable in the next couple of weeks, looking at it in a little more depth. And so Jesus was teaching this parable in the midst of other parables or stories that he was telling. And so it says here in verse 11, Jesus continued, "There was a man who had two sons. The younger one said to his father, 'Father, give me my share of the estate.' So he divided his property between them. Not long after that, the younger son got together all he had, set off for a distant country, and there squandered his wealth in wild living. After he had spent everything, there was a severe famine in that whole country, and he began to be in need. So he went and hired himself out to a citizen of that country, who sent him to his fields to feed pigs. He longed to fill his stomach with the pods that the pigs were eating, but no one gave him anything. When he came to his senses, he said, 'How many of my father's hired men have food to spare, and here I am starving to death? I will set out and go back to my father and say to him, Father, I have sinned against heaven and against you. I am no longer worthy to be called your son. Make me like one of your hired men.'" May the Lord bless this portion from his holy word. I know it sounds awkward to end right there, because you know the rest of the story, don't you? But don't get so caught up in the rest of the story, because I think you need to see and to understand what Jesus is doing here, because we have to see it in the context of his era and of the society within which he was living. In those days, there was really no need to make up a will. You didn't have to do a will, because everything was already set down in the pattern of doing things in Jewish society. You didn't get to decide who got what out of your will. You couldn't have a favorite child that you wanted to give a little bit more to. You couldn't have the less favorite child that you wanted to cut out of your will or anything like that. You couldn't do any of that stuff. It was all prescribed by law. And so how it usually worked was that the oldest son got the majority of the estate. If you were the firstborn, you had it made. You got the majority of the estate. And then any subsequent sons got a portion thereof. So if you had two sons, then it was two-thirds and one-third. If you had a daughter, sorry, out of luck, you got nothing. That's just how it worked in those days. That the sons were then, the oldest son was then responsible for taking care of any daughters. And so when this young man comes to his father and he says, "You know, I'd like to have everything that's coming to me." He knew exactly what he had coming to him. He knew exactly what it was that was going to be his someday. And we hear that and we go, okay, you know, that's, you know, a lot of us have gone to our parents and said, you know, can I borrow a couple, you know, will you help me get this car? Will you help me with the down payment? You know, I mean, it's not unusual. We know stories about that of parents who've helped out their adult children. And so at first glance, it doesn't seem as if it is that big of a deal for this young man to come to his father and to ask for his portion of the estate. But in fact, it really is. In fact, it is a very traumatic thing for the dad, because the son going to the father saying, I want my share of the estate, is saying, I'd rather have you dead than alive. He is writing off his father. He's saying to his father that I have no need for you, no use for you. I want to be done with you. I want to get on with my life. You know, so just give me my share of everything and let me get on with living my life, and I'll do what I want to do. And, you know, I'm dead to you. You're dead to me. End of the relationship. Done deal. Nothing more to do with each other. That's the only way that it worked in that society. That was exactly what the father would have heard when the son came to him and said, I want my portion of the estate. He would have heard that he's not loved, not wanted, doesn't want to be part of the son doesn't want him to be part of his life, doesn't want to have anything to do with his dad, wants it to be over and done with. So when we look at it, we got to see it in that light. This is not just the splitting up of the estate. This is not just a father helping a son live out his dreams, go do what he wants to do. This is a relationship that is broken. This is a relationship that is torn apart. This is a relationship that is being cast to the side. The father is being treated as if he's useful for one thing, and that one thing is the money that comes to the son. And that's all that the kid cares about. And so we listen to the story, and we hear where it is going, and we know that this kid is going to go. Different translations translate it in a different manner, and I like how this one translates it and says, he went off into a foreign country and did some wild living. You know, you can fill in the gaps on what that might mean. You can kind of figure that out for yourself, but he didn't really go off to start off a new business or to establish himself, buy a farm somewhere or anything like that. His interest was in just having a good old time. It was all about himself. He wanted to do those things that made him happy, that brought him pleasure and were fun for him. He didn't want responsibility. He didn't want all those things that tie people down. He didn't want any of that. He just wanted to go and have a good old time. That's all he was interested in. Now, we're smart enough to know that in any situation, whether this parable or in real life, whatever, that never ends up good, does it? How long does money last when you're spending it on everything you want? It goes so quick, doesn't it? You know, you can spend a lot of money in a hurry if all your desire is to do those things that are fun and bring you pleasure. Your money will be gone in a heartbeat. Well, that's exactly what happened to this young man. He realized he'd made a mistake. And I just love how Jesus tells this parable, because he throws in these zingers to his hearers. And maybe you didn't notice it, but let me point it out for you. But what is the job that the kid ends up with? Feeding pigs. Oy vey, a good Jewish boy feeding pigs. That's not a good thing. That's Jesus' way of saying that he had gotten to the lowest point that he could get to. He was bottomed out. When the pigs that the Jewish people did not even consider worthy of owning or eating or anything else, if the pigs are eating that well, better than he is, you know this kid has hit the bottom and can't go any lower. But he comes to his senses and he thinks to himself, you know what? I've really messed up with my dad. To my dad, I'm dead. I'm not a son anymore. He doesn't have two sons anymore. He only has one son. And so he decides to himself that what he'll do is going to throw himself on the mercy of the court. He's going to travel back to his dad and not ask to be received back into the family, not even to be one of the live-in help that live and work on the estate there or anything like that. He says, maybe dad can get me a job as a hired hand. Now, in that time, those who were listening to it would have heard and understood that there is that distinction between those who were the permanent help, who lived on the ranch, so to speak, and you know, had accommodations provided for them, food provided for them, and those who were kind of day trade, that they would come in, work for the day. If there's work that day, there was, and if there wasn't, there wasn't, and you didn't have any guarantees. And so he didn't even think that he could be worthy of being one of the people working on the property and being provided food and shelter. He thought that maybe he could get a job with one of the people who came in and worked on occasion with his father on his father's property. So he didn't even have high hopes and expectations. He thought, if I could at least be, you know, a day laborer on my father's farm, at least then I'll have something. And so he began what we call a turnabout, repentance, or seeking to amend his life, to get a do-over, to get a start over. And so he turned and he faced himself back towards home. Now, you got to come the next 2 weeks yet to get the rest of the story. But that turnabout is a major first step. That change of perspective, that ceasing to look at the world as if it's all about me, and starting to look at the world as if there is more to this world than my self-centered hopes and desires and wishes. So the young son makes that turn and heads for home. And we'll see where the story goes from there. But it is a reminder to us that as we come home today, as we make our way to this table, none of us are coming as perfect people. Has anybody here gone through your life and made the right decision every time? Do any of us here have something that we regret, we wish we hadn't said, wish we hadn't done, or something we wish we had done, or a regret that we haven't accomplished? We all come like that son, making that turn toward home, seeking to be welcomed, seeking to be loved, seeking to have a new beginning. This table is a table of new beginnings. It is a reminder to us of God's great love toward each and every one of us. A reminder to us of the depth and the breadth and the height of the love of Jesus Christ toward every single one of us. So as we come to the table today, we come as the wandering sons and daughters, seeking a Father's love, seeking a Father's mercy, seeking a Father's grace. So let us come before this table and let us enjoy this meal. Would you pray with me? Almighty and ever-loving God, we do give you thanks that in our lives we can make course corrections. We can do U-turns. We can seek out new beginnings where we have failed, where we have done that which we regret. Oh, Heavenly Father, as we come before your table this day, let these simple elements of bread and cup be for us a nourishment and a strength in the deepest part of who we are, reminding us of the depth and the breadth and the height of your love as we have seen it in Jesus Christ.